countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Follow our new Weanling Watch series for expert analysis and commentary from thousands of cattle sales weekly. Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal, bringing 295,000 readers the latest farming news and the best of rural Ireland weekly.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. Coming up between now and 9 o'clock, how Irish agri-tech research and innovation is having a global impact. Leitrim says no to gold digging. And as methane comes under the spotlight at COP26, we find out more about its effects on global warming and how it can be reduced.
Text 51551. Email countrywide at rte.ie and tweet at RTE Countrywide.
But first,
I guess because we were always involved in it from a very young age, we were always trying to kind of solve our own problems. So always trying to find an easier way to do something or find a simpler way to do something.
This is Jack Cotter, and along with his younger brother Nick, they've been entrepreneurs since their early teens.
And I guess it was encouraged, and we were driven to do it. So having the farm here, we had the tools, we had the equipment, and we were able to play around with things.
Growing up on the family farm just outside Abbeyfield in County Limerick, Jack and Nick have just established their third enterprise.
We were always encouraged to get involved and get stuck in and give a hand. So the innovation and the entrepreneurship, I feel, was encouraged from there. Dad was an entrepreneur himself. He owned a forestry business for a long time.
Beginning with selling firewood, they also run an organic lamb enterprise and have most recently established the Cotter Crate, an invention aimed at reducing the hardship associated with handling lambs. More on that presently. But first, let's go back to the beginning. And aged 13 and 11, Jack and Nick started their first business.
And Jack one day got this bright idea from being out with a sawmill demo with Dad, and they saw that what they were doing with the lower quality logs was turning them into firewood. And Jack came home and said, Jesus, wouldn't that be an easy way to make a few quid and buy a PlayStation or whatever the hell? And why don't we start it? It seemed very simple. Just get a chainsaw, start cutting away, knocking on doors in local housing estates. Let's do it. Packing net bags in the evenings after school and knocking on the housing estates of Abbeyfield and trying to sell it. But it's over the last number of years, it's grown exponentially. We employ 5 people now full time. We're selling nationwide. It's probably been a great springboard for us to enable us to move on to chase bigger ideas, and getting that experience at a young age, it was just incredible.
We actually put together a questionnaire to basically prove to our parents that there was, I guess, a market there for it. We didn't quite realise it at the time, but what we were actually doing was market research. So actually with the local schools, I would have been in the Clos Gidea, August Joseph in Abbeyfield, and Nick would have been still at the National School at the time. We went into the schools together and we got these questionnaires. We gave them to everybody so that they could take them home to their parents and we could get some information about, you know, what would people buy, what kind of heating appliances they had, how much would they be willing to pay for it, and also give our parents that extra bit of confidence that there may actually be something here. We may actually be able to make something of it. And they saw that enthusiasm and they wanted to drive us on more to continue and pursue it.
Running alongside the firewood business is the organic lamb operation.
You know, we produce about 300 lambs every year for slaughter, and now all of them are sold through this organic lamb business. And what it's really about is getting a super premium price for a super premium product. I mean, instead of getting 95 euros at the time from the abattoir for that lamb, we're now getting 220 euros for a full lamb selling it directly. But it's very much just about it earning the price that we believe it deserves to earn.
And the latest enterprise is the Cotter Crate, an award-winning innovation which had its eureka moment when they were dosing their own lambs.
During that process, we had to separate the ewes and the lambs. And then there was a very time-consuming process of giving a vaccination to every single lamb individually. Mm. Now, you can imagine a lamb is about the size of a puppy and you've got hundreds of these puppies. You end up bent over the whole time, and then you're trying to give a treatment to an animal and then identify that that animal has been treated and separated from the rest of them. So it takes an incredibly long time.
Yeah, so what the Cotter Crate is it's an animal handling and monitoring system that basically takes the backache out of handling lambs. So I suppose it brings the animal up to operator height. We've got two V-shaped walls here, and we move one of them toward the other, and then the floor drops underneath. So we basically hold the lamb in this V-shaped wedge, and then the animal is then immobilized, and the farmer can do all the jobs he needs to do. So, you know, half of Irish sheep farmers suffer from lower back pain from all this sheep handling. So there's a health and safety aspect here, certainly. But really, the bigger thing is the labor saving and the time efficiency, because instead of handing lambs in a race and having, you know, trying to do four different jobs and have four different people doing them, one farmer can be operating the machine with the lamb in front of them and do all these things at the same time. The crate has weigh cells built in, so that'll pick up the weight. And then he's at a lovely ideal height, so there's no bending over the back, there's no stress. And all we're doing then is just leave him off, just let pull back the side towards ourselves. That'll drop the lamb back to the floor, and then just put our floor back up into the supporting position.
So it's like a little cradle that you have here. Lamb comes up, walks into it, it's at a perfect height for you to do all you need to do, and you have the software then to get all the information that you need, such as the weight, and that lamb weighed there 39.2 kilos. You're dosed, and off they go out the other side.
Do you know, sure, on the market there are more expensive options where you've got pneumatics going on, but this is all entirely mechanical, so it makes it very affordable as well to the farmer.
So Nick, tell me a little bit more about the software attached to this.
Yeah, so with the software we're solving a different problem, which is anthelmintic resistance. So anthelmintics are these range of drugs that we use in sheep farming to control worms. And over the last decades, due to overuse and misuse, we've got increasing resistance to them, similar to antibiotic resistance in humans. And it's costing about €1 billion of loss, and if we don't solve this problem, it's only going to further deteriorate. The science tells us that 80% of worms are actually only in 20% of the sheep, which kind of, when you read that, you know, the practice in sheep at the moment is that we go in with a wormer once a month and we dose everything. And that kind of tells you that dosing and blanket treating is unnecessary and it's actually harmful. So what we've come up with in our software, and our software is essentially a weighhead that's been built into a mobile phone app. So we're bringing in weight data, but what's also inside in our software is something called the happy factor. So the happy factor is an advanced algorithm that basically determines which lambs will benefit from treatment and which lambs won't. So we look at the animal's weight data, we look at genetics, we look at local weather conditions, and we look at pasture availability and quality out in the field. And from this then, we're able to identify which lambs would and would not benefit from treatment. And the general results have shown that we can reduce the anthelmintic use on the farm by about 40% with no compromise to animal welfare. So clearly the software is correctly identifying which would and would not benefit from treatment.
So Jack, are you in manufacturing now with this?
At the moment, we've just come to the end of our testing and our trials, which have been a resounding success. And we're just in the process now of putting all the finishing touches on our production model, and then of course proceeding into trying to figure out how exactly we're going to bring all these crates to market in the coming year.
I think we'll be kept quite occupied now for the next 5 to 10 years, really trying to get this on as many farms as possible and trying to share the benefits that this can deliver to as many farmers as possible.
Listen, congratulations and the very best of luck to both of you in the future, to Jack and to Nick.
Thanks for having us, Damon.
Thank you very much.
Now that's Jack and Nick Cotter, Limerick brothers and entrepreneurs, telling me about their latest venture, the Cotter Crate. You can find out more details about that on www.thecottercrate.com. Well, when it comes to agriculture in this country, it's not all about the food that is produced. Ireland is home to many successful agri-tech, agri-food research and machinery manufacturing businesses that export their products and expertise worldwide. Dairy Master, Keenan and McHale, to name just three, are manufacturers of farm machinery with a global reach, which the Cotters there are hoping to emulate in the years ahead. Now, as Science Week begins, we thought we might just find out a little bit more about new scientific advances in farming. James Maloney is a senior regional development manager with Enterprise Ireland, and he runs the AgriTech Innovation Arena every year at the National Ploughing Championships. He's on the line. Good morning, James.
Hi, Damien. How you doing?
Good. We know how big food production is on this island, but on the AgriTech research and manufacturing side, this is big business too. Just give me a breakdown of this side of the Irish economy.
Yeah, Damien, it's quite an important sector. It's growing. As you said before, we don't have the presence that the food industry here has, but we'd estimate that it's probably worth about $1 billion in sales to the Irish economy, implying somewhere in the region maybe of 4,000 people. So it's quite a big sector emerging for us, and it's really born out of our love of the land. Most of the companies here are family based companies that are associated or one or two generations from the farm, and are making a big global impact.
Now, technology, it's key to the vast majority of farms now. I suppose, like any other business, it's all about technology. But a lot of people would be very surprised how much of a role technology plays on average Irish farms. The smartphone, for example, is a must-have now, I think, on nearly all farms.
Yeah, and I think that's the probably misconception that rural Ireland doesn't rely on technology, but I think there was an IFA survey last year, and 86% of farmers were using a smartphone.
And that's not just now for texting their friends or watching YouTube videos, that's for actual work on the farm.
I couldn't comment on their individual use, Damien, but there's a lot of it that is associated with actual work. Yeah. We can see that the apps they can download, the Herdwatch app, WooCall, all this technology, it's enabling farmers to make decisions and to have. If you imagine, like, you're out on a field, or you're in your tractor, you're in your calf and pens, it's very hard to record data, so, and to write it down and keep it, and notes get lost. So this information, the smartphone has really allowed farmers, it's with them the whole time, so it's allowed farming to capture data and store it.
Yeah, well, you're a farmer yourself, so can you give us a couple of examples of how this sort of technology works for you on a daily basis?
Yeah, we're tillage farming at home, and we're taking this at the step into GPS on the tractors, so just for guidance. And we took the decision to do this. It's kind of to make sure we're not overlapping and spreading fertilizer, which is saving money and also saving the environment. And this year, then we upped the level on it, and we also put on the yield monitor on the combine harvester. So this tracks the machine as we harvest through the fields, and it shows us in real time data where the yield is. So we know where the bad areas of the field is. We know where we're yielding well. And we can make our decisions then. We probably knew that it was happening when you sat in the combine and watched the flow of the crop coming up. But when you go home and you sit down at night and you pull out the map and you have a look at it, and you'll say, well, I need to do something there in that part of the field. It's given us the information probably that the generations had before us, because all the work is achieved so quickly on a farm. Yeah. Now with the increasing scale of machines, pressure on weather and the scale of operation.
Well, I'm sure it saves you money and allows for greater efficiency as well. But in the week that's in it as well, sustainability is now and viability key to the future, protecting the environment, protecting biodiversity. Can technology and is technology working hand in hand with improving the carbon footprint of farms?
Oh, it is. Absolutely. And we can see that now this year, emerging from the innovation arena, Damien, that we see the trends, say, three big trends that we saw was the science and technology, engineering and automation, and the IoT sensors technology, and leading into artificial intelligence. So if we look at this year, the winner, Brandon Bioscience, it's a biostimulant company that has partnered up with a fertilizer company.
Right.
And they're looking at the seaweed extracts from Ascophyllum nodosum. When you're talking to people, seaweed seems to be the problem, or the problem solver of ruminant emissions.
And it's funny, yeah, because we will be talking about that a little bit later on, about ways of reducing the notorious methane in our environment. Look, we're going to leave it there, James. Thanks very much for chatting to us. And I know that you run the Innovation Arena, the National Ploughing Championships, and you work as Development Manager there with Enterprise Ireland, and a lot of people will know you from the ploughing. And we look forward to seeing you again there next year in the Innovation Arena, where all of that tech can be seen up close. We're going to take a break.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal, bringing you expert analysis on what the new CAP deal means for you and your farm payments.
Well, what a week it's been with COP26 and the Climate Action Plan. We're in a period of immense change as we transition to a low-carbon world. As part of this, we need minerals and metals to make solar power technologies and renewable wind energy and batteries. It's a fair bet that mining companies will increasingly look for these materials underground. But the prospect of mining is a contentious issue for some local communities. And this is particularly true in North Leitrim, where prospecting licences for gold, silver and base minerals may be granted. Ella McSweeney went to Manor Hamilton to hear more.
We're currently walking over the laneway at the back of our house in the townland of Pullboy, looking at the north face of Bembo. Sounds a bit like the north face of the Eiger, right? Where we graze animals holistically using conservation grazing methods.
Farmer and teacher James Gilmartin walks up the side of Bembo, a shapely hill near Manor Hamilton in Leitrim. He's on the search for his rare breed herd of Dexter cattle.
Come on. You've brought the gate in, or I'll just go in. Come on. There's a collection of them here. There are four cows and four calves, the bull, Rupert, and one in calf heifer. I mean, there's plenty of quality in them animals.
The Irish name for this townland is An Poll Bui, the yellow hole. It hints at what may lie under the rocks, gold. On the 7th of October, the Minister for the Environment, Climate and Communications, Eamon Ryan, announced that he intends to grant a renewed prospecting licence for gold, silver and base metals in 47 townlands in this part of Leitrim. It'll be given to a Northern Irish company called Flintridge Resources Limited, a subsidiary of a Canadian corporation called Galantis Gold.
About 3 weeks ago, my sister-in-law sent me a WhatsApp message saying, "Did you see this? It was up on Leitrim County Council website that the minister had intended granting the prospecting licence to a company and that we had till the 7th of November to object."
What is it that you are most concerned about?
So my major concerns would be the effect it's going to have in the area, both from a farmer point of view, from a tourism point of view, from an environmental point of view. I really don't see it as a resource that's going to be used for the local community. Yeah, we have to be realist about this in that mining is a necessary tool in today's world. Like, I mean, the lithium in our batteries, in our phone, all the renewables that solar panels, PV panels, all the rest of these things that are required require mining to take place. But gold is not a resource that we need. I mean, studies have shown there's over 500 years worth of gold left available for what we need for today's society. So the idea that you would come in and do such a heavy extractive industry which has a huge implication in the current climate biodiversity crisis in the negative, it's kind of bewildering. I mean, I don't understand it.
This current stage is for a prospecting license, which is essentially that the company comes in and just takes a look and sees what's there. Is that not a good first stage? Because there may be nothing there. There may be something there, or they may decide there's something there and we're not going to bother. But what's the problem with at least that first stage happening?
That's actually one of my gravest concerns. You see, a company comes in to do prospecting, but they're invited in by the state. If they find something after investing their time and effort and money into finding that, it's a very grey area where the obligation lies, like to get granting a mining licence. And then if it's a situation landowners don't want to sell, could it lead to a situation where you get a compulsory purchase order? It's just very, very concerning. And the lack of knowledge really at the start is what kind of got everyone so agitated in this part of the world.
A prospecting license means that a company can explore to see if valuable minerals are there. It doesn't authorise mining. There are currently 540 prospecting licences active across Ireland. At the point where a mining licence is granted, the Irish state gets 25% corporation tax and a royalty payment from the mining company. But James, a seventh generation farmer, is clear. Any benefits are greatly outweighed by the impact mining could have on the land and communities.
My worst fears is that the particular townland, which has come up in the previous studies done by cross-border companies and by the Geological Survey of Ireland through taxpayers' money, by the way, has shown that there is a good chance there's gold and silver and some base materials available, but mainly gold in our area. the lamb would see peyote and would be left devastated through overcast mining, and that would be my legacy for my children, which is not something that is, I aspire to at all.
Watch it, James. We're pulling out of the way.
James and about 50 other people have formed a group called Treasure Leitrim, and they've secured cross-party support from local TDs and councillors. A group of 15 local farmers meet in James's yard to get an update on the campaign. All the farmers here oppose the licence being granted.
Michael Gallagher, local farmer here in Leitrim. We're trying to keep the countryside as tidy as we can, to leave it in a condition, as better condition than we got it in.
Matthew Martin.
How old are you?
17. I think it's pure disgrace. I think it shouldn't be done. I think we like going out looking at the land and looking at the sheep, and I think they'll take away all that.
What's your name?
Seamus Feeney. I'd be totally opposed to it because it's an environmental issue. It's going to harm the environment.
Patsy Rooney. Our land in this locality is nice, and sure, God help, we'll keep it that way.
Oliver O'Hara. A nice rural environment to bring up families in, and I'd be totally opposed to it now. I'd fear for the environment. I'd fear for the way that they're going to leave the place after them, you know.
Galantis Gold Corporation declined to be interviewed, but in a statement they said that since 2014 they have already prospected some of the licensed areas in Leitrim without negative reaction locally, and that if metals are present in commercially viable quantities, full planning and environmental approvals would be required. Back on the hills of Benbow, James is focused on a different future for his land.
It's very, very hard to have 100% trust in companies come in and do the right thing in your land when at the bottom line they're just trying to make money. And that's not, you know, for me to say is a good or bad thing, but if it's going to be taking something out of North Leitrim and causing harm, I think I should have my say about it. You don't own the land. It's not up to James Gilmartin to make a killing to leave a major part of the farm gone for his children. It's not, it isn't mine to give away. In 5 years' time, what would I say to myself if I didn't do something about this and companies came in and they started prospecting and they found something, and then it becomes a whole quagmire of, you know, division and all the rest that goes with that. Now is the time to say, look, please don't do this.
So leave it in the ground.
Leave it in the ground, absolutely. We're more than happy to look after the gold that's above the ground and the people.
Ella McSweeney in North Leitrim. Now, we've a statement from the Department of the Environment saying that the majority of prospecting activities carried out under a prospecting licence are temporary and involve minimal disturbance. All proposed exploration activities are the subject of environmental screening by the Geoscience Regulation Office to ensure that they'll not give rise to any significant adverse effects on the environment. End of statement. Now, as you heard, the deadline for that public consultation on granting the licences in Leitrim is tomorrow, so you can email your thoughts to gsro@decc.gov.ie. That's gsro@decc.gov.ie.
And together with the European Union, we're launching a global methane pledge to collectively reduce methane emissions, one of the most potent greenhouse gases, by at least 30% by the end of the decade. More than 70 countries have already signed up to support rapid reduction of methane pollution, and I encourage every nation to sign on. It's the simple, most effective strategy we have to slow global warming in the near term.
US President Joe Biden on the fight to tackle methane emissions at the COP26 summit in Glasgow. Methane is produced from a variety of sources, but in Ireland, with agriculture our biggest industry, it tallies that livestock are the biggest emitters of methane. The Irish government has given a firm commitment to join that global fight and reduce methane emissions by 30%. To try and put all of this in context, I'm joined this morning from Glasgow by Miles Allen, who is Professor of Geosystem Science at the School of Geography and the Environment in the University of Oxford, also a lead author on the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. We're also joined by Dr. Fionnuala Murphy, co-lead investigator on Farm Zero C and assistant professor at the School of Biosystems and Food Engineering in UCD, who is trialling many other ideas on how to reduce methane on farms. But first, John Keane is president of Macro na Farma, Young Farmers Organisation. He was at COP this week in Glasgow. John, good morning. Tell me about the atmosphere in the place. Did you see all the great and the good, and what was it like to be there?
Good morning, Damien, and good morning to all your listeners. It was from an experience point of view, Damien, it was a fantastic opportunity, as you say, to rub shoulders with the great and the good, and to rub shoulders with some of the main change makers across the world. I think your intro there from Joe Biden is part of it, but I think where I took, and where my colleague Gillian Richardson in Mockra took most of our solace from, was actually the young people who were driving the environmental change across the globe. And I think none more so than we met a lady from the Pan-African Young Farmers Association in the region of 80 million members who are addressing climate change on that continent. And it was refreshing to see that it is young people who are the majority who are driving the change, pushing that change forward across the globe. And I think it came back home to Ireland with a real sense of optimism and a real sense of that young people are going to be the people who drive that change on a global scale and not just at a national scale. And I think that was one of the big things that we took away from COP this week.
Well, has your perspective on the future of farming changed as a result of your visitation this week?
I think from the point of view of farming in this country, and it was something as we told our story to the different nations in attendance and the different delegates that we met, the fabric of what agriculture looks like in Ireland. And it was a realisation for ourselves as well as from others that the agriculture in Ireland is not represented or reflected in the other agricultural systems across the globe, but it's very different in terms of our outdoor pasture-based systems. And I think from a young farmer's point of view within Ireland, I think we are perfectly positioned to meet that global demand for increasing food and to also meet the demand from an increasing focus on the environmental pressures.
Right.
And I think that was something which was echoed from contributors on the various panels that we've attended out in COP, and indeed from some of the sentiments that were expressed from some officials as well in relation to the role that agriculture has to play in meeting our environmental commitments.
All right. You spoke with your colleagues and counterparts from sub-Saharan Africa. I mean, was there any sense from them that the sort of farming systems that we have in place in the Northern Hemisphere, in Europe, the subsidisation of farming here, the fact that we export so much milk powder and so on to Africa as well, did they give you any sense that that is actually affecting them negatively?
I think quite the contrary, Damien. For the people that we spoke, the research that is in particularly in Ireland and other countries that we would have spoke about into how agriculture has progressed, the type of systems in terms of nutrient management, in terms of water management, in terms of inclusive biodiversity and soil management is something which they were very interested in learning more about and implementing some of the practices that are here. But I also think it was a realisation from our side of things that agriculture on that continent looks very different. And in fact that soil erosion and desertification are huge issues in that part of the world. And it did make the realisation from us that how lucky we are to farm on soils within this country that are the type of soils that they are, the climate that we're in, and our ability to grow grass all year round. It was something which was reinforced, I suppose, the position here and highlighted the importance of agriculture as it is sustainable here within
sure.
this country.
Well, of course, the reason there are so many problems probably in Africa and other places is because of climate change and the effects that it's having on soil there. Stay with me, John. Professor Miles Allen, how has the experience been for you this week in Glasgow?
Well, I only arrived yesterday, actually, but I've been sort of working on the methane pledge and methane for years, actually. So we knew this was coming, and it's good news globally for the effort to stem climate change.
Yeah.
But I think it needs also to be kept in perspective.
Well, methane in Ireland is overwhelmingly aligned with, to not put too fine a point on it, with belching cattle. So can you tell us a little bit more about it in a global context and why it is so destructive for people listening to us that don't really know and understand the effects of methane on the environment?
Well, methane is a very powerful greenhouse gas, no question there. And at the moment, methane emissions are going up. And that's actually causing a lot of global warming. So we have to get that under control. We have to stop increasing methane emissions and put them on a downward path. But the total amount of warming that will be avoided by reducing methane emissions by 30% is around a tenth of a degree. So to put that in perspective, that's about the warming we've had due to fossil fuel emissions, carbon dioxide, since the Paris Agreement in 2015. So yes, reducing methane emissions can help, but in the big picture, it's the accumulation of carbon dioxide from fossil fuels that is the elephant in the corner.
And what are the big drivers globally of methane? We know in Ireland it's livestock, it's cows, but what? Yes. Where does it sit globally?
Well, globally, it's roughly 50-50, agriculture, and then industry and waste management is the other half. And a lot of the industrial methane emissions really are pretty pointless. It's sort of natural gas leaking out of pipelines. If you fix the pipes, you but not only save yourself money because natural gas is valuable, you stop the impact on the environment. So that's really where everybody's focused to start with. The fossil fuel industry needs to really get its act together and stop the methane leaks into the atmosphere. That is, you know, that will, if we do that, we will largely deliver the 30% methane pledge. And that's got to be the priority.
Well, reducing cattle numbers around the world as well would be another, obviously, positive in all of this. But there is a debate about carbon leakage and where is the most efficient place to produce meat and dairy. What is your view on that argument?
Well, there's a lot of elements to that. There's the sort of rights of existing farmers. There's the rights of developing countries to develop their herds and so forth. I wouldn't want to get into that. But the one area which I do think farmers deserve a fair hearing on is that we should be reporting warming impact, so the impact of our activities on global temperature, not the very misleading carbon footprint that's used by everybody, including the UNFCCC, where we pretend methane is kind of an equivalent to carbon dioxide. And that doesn't actually reflect its impact on global temperature at all.
But it's a very potent gas, much more potent than other greenhouse gases, isn't that right?
It's a potent gas, but it's short-lived. So any increase in methane emissions has a big warming impact, more than sort of 4 to 5 times what you'd think by looking at the conventional accounting system. But a steady methane emissions, constant methane emissions. So if you've got a herd of cattle that has been around for you know, generations and you haven't been increasing it or decreasing it, then your methane emissions are actually causing 3 to 4 times less warming than would be implied by those conventional carbon footprint calculations.
But if you were to increase numbers, absolute emissions go up, though.
Increasing numbers has a lot of damage. Keeping numbers stable does much less damage than people think. And, of course, if you can reduce methane emissions, and crucially, if you can reduce methane emissions by about, say, 3% per decade, then your methane emissions are not having any further warming impact on climate. You're not cooling the climate, but you're not making matters any worse. The difference with carbon dioxide is very stark. As long as you're emitting carbon dioxide, you're driving up global temperatures. The only way to stop carbon dioxide from causing global warming is to stop dumping it into the atmosphere. That's it.
But
methane is different. If we manage to reduce methane emissions by just 3% per decade, then methane emissions will no longer be causing any further global warming. And I think farmers have a reasonable case to say this should be reflected in national accounts. Countries should report their warming impact and individual sectors' warming impact, as well as this carbon footprint calculation that everybody already does.
OK, stay with me. Dr. Fionnuala Murphy is assistant professor at the School of Biosystems and Food Engineering in UCD, who's involved in trialling ways to reach net zero livestock farming. So we might begin with what's going on there in Bandon and Cork. Fionnuala, tell me about the Carbery demonstration farm. What's going on there to try and reduce methane emissions from cattle?
Hi, Damien. So it's the Farm Zero C project. We're working with dairy farmers at West Cork, as you said, which is part of the Carbery Co-op. So what we're doing is we're trialling a number of different mitigation strategies towards reducing emissions to 2023 and beyond. So by 2023, we hope to have halved the carbon footprint of the farm and increase the biodiversity also of the farm as well.
So will this involve reducing numbers or reducing output?
It won't involve either. So essentially what we're doing from a methane point of view is trialling a number of feed additives that have been developed globally to reduce greenhouse or methane emissions from, we'll say, cattle belching, as you mentioned earlier on. So we're trialling those out in the project to determine in the Irish context, what sort of emissions reductions we can achieve by maintaining feeding levels, so adding these feed additives, so essentially not reducing any cattle numbers or productivity.
So by changing, I don't want to simplify this too much, but you're saying that by adapting new technologies mainly focused on a change of diet, in other words, what you're feeding the cows, can have the impact of reducing methane from those individual animals?
Yes, so trials have shown with some of the feed additives you can get a reduction in methane of around 30%. If we think about Irish agriculture, though, because it's mainly grass-based, that potential would reduce because those additives may need to be fed on a more regular basis. But if the cows are grazing, that makes it more difficult. So that's what we're trying to do in this project, carry out the feeding trials reflecting the Irish condition to see what sort of emissions reduction we can utilise by implementing those strategies.
Now, there are other areas of the farm where methane is produced as well. From your baseline observations, about 5% of farm methane emissions come from slurry storage. Can that figure be reduced as well?
Yes, exactly. So we're having a look at that and we're implementing basically a chemical amendment that can be added to slurry tanks developed in Ireland. And that'll also, I suppose, the emissions reduction potential is very high, up to around 90%, 98%. So that is also an area. So as you mentioned, if the typical farm emissions would be around 5%, if we can reduce those emissions, that would be helpful towards achieving greater reductions on the farm.
Okay, so just what you're saying there is, Fionnuala, for people listening, that obviously we have this 51% target to meet. Agriculture has to play its part of maybe between 20 and 30%. There is technology in terms of feeding to cows which may play an important part in meeting those targets. Is that what you're saying?
There is, yes. And they're at the stage where I suppose there's a lot of research and development has gone into these different technologies, and we're at the stage where we need to get them to the commercial stage. So as we're trialing them out in this project, we're hoping to come up with a blueprint for farmers towards giving them advice and strategies how to implement these technologies on their farm. So talking about the feed additives, but also looking at other aspects of the farm, so implementing renewable energy. Solar panels, for example, could be installed on farms across the country, and that would contribute significantly to our renewable energy goals as well. In addition to that, farmers are very good at managing the land, so we can look at utilising multi-species boards, which would reduce fertiliser input into the farm as well. So really taking a holistic picture of the farm to reduce emissions from the animals, but also on farm as well from soil.
Okay. Professor Allen, your colleague, Professor Jude Capper, in reference to a BBC report on the climate impact of flying a private jet from Rome to COP26, was 11,281 kilos of carbon, including high altitude emissions. She says that's the equivalent of 17 years average consumption of boneless beef. The reason we make reference to that is that there is an awful lot of whataboutery going on in relation to the debate this week, that, you know, we're not as bad as you and you're not as bad as me and so on and so forth. Is that a pointless debate to actually be having and driving a wedge between farmers and other sectors?
There's a lot of pointless debates going on. I'm not sure the whataboutery is helpful, but the farmers do have a very good point. Fionnuala is not getting the credit she deserves for making those reductions in methane emissions because we have a 30-year out-of-date accounting system that does not value the actual warming impact of methane emissions and changes in methane emissions, and is just based on something they made up in 1990 as a sort of workaround, and that's what's got to change.
So the way we measure the way the instrument that's been used to measure methane emissions, you're saying, is out of date?
It is. It just doesn't reflect the impact of methane emissions on global temperature. And we now have a global temperature goal. We're aiming to keep temperatures well below 2 degrees, so as close as possible to 1.5 degrees. So it makes sense to measure the impact of policies and measures like Fionnuala was discussing in terms of their impact on global temperature. And I believe farmers, if they reduce their emissions and thereby actually reduce warming. If a farmer reduces, if Irish agriculture manages to reduce methane emissions by 10% by 2030, that'll be the equivalent of actually planting large numbers of trees and drawing CO2 out of the atmosphere in terms of your impact, the impact of Irish agriculture over that decade
global temperature. Well, it said that the ask of Irish agriculture should be somewhere closer to three times that, 30%.
Well, if they do that, I mean, I was just quoting the sort of current. If they do that, they'd be equivalent to planting even more trees. Now, where I think farmers have a very reasonable case is under all the proposals for managing land going forward, farmers will be given credit, paid to plant trees. But if farmers do have exactly the same impact on global temperature by reducing methane emissions, they won't get any credit at all. They'll just be told sort of, well done, you're doing a bit less damage than you were before, which actually is, it completely fails to reflect the actual impact of those methane reductions on global temperature, which is why I think farmers have a very reasonable case to make, both to the Irish government and to the EU, that we should be reporting the impact of measures on global temperature, not just their impact on nominal carbon footprint.
All right, OK. Look, we're going to have to leave it there. And I know agriculture is very much the focus of the continuing COP discussions today in Glasgow. And I'll let you back to that. Professor Miles Allen, thank you very much for joining us. And I'll invite you maybe to come back on the programme again at a later stage. Also to John Keane, President of Macro and Affirma, thank you for joining us. And also Dr. Fionnuala Murphy from UCD, thanks for joining us on the programme. Well, the number of people who've died across the globe from COVID-19 passed 5 million. This week. It was a sad and sobering milestone, particularly as case numbers are rising again in this country. And I'm sure listening this morning, there are families who've lost a loved one to COVID over the past 19 months. Jane Clark grew up on a farm in County Roscommon. Her father died in that time before COVID, but a poem she wrote then will resonate with many families now. From her collection When the Tree Falls, published by Blood Axe Books, Jane now reads the poem That I Could. Until I talk to you at the same time next week, bye-bye and thanks for listening. We leave you now with Jane Clark reading That I Could.
That I could take away from him these long days in the hospital, the digging for a vein in his arm, the drip that stops him sleeping, the pain that makes him whisper, Jesus Christ, oh Jesus Christ. That I could take him back to his cobblestones and barn, his rooks and the birch trees, his nettles and ditches, limestone and bog. That I could find the words to tell him what he will always be. Horse chestnut petals falling pink in the yard. The well hidden in a blackthorn thicket. A summer evening's hush. Cattle standing orange in the shallows.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal, bringing you expert analysis on what the new CAP deal means for you and your farm payments.